Hey guys, it's really rainy out there today. Who's getting wet? Who's getting drippy and droopy in their drawers? Who's getting real chilly under the collar? And who's getting ready to be heated up because of all of that mess? Let's get hot on SmartLess!
SmartLess.
Oh, boy. Guys, it is cold here in Los Angeles. You know what I could have used last night?
What's that, Jason?
Is an extra blanket, maybe even a Sherpa blanket, huh?
You know where, you could get one?
Where?
What? If you go to, and if I don't know if my coordinates are correct here, but if you go to www.wondryshop.com/smartless.
What's that?
Yeah.
That's our Merch Madness store.
Can I get sweats there?
Do they sell Sherpa blankets in there?
Yeah, of course.
Can I get t-shirts?
Yeah, of course.
What about warm socks?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that'd be great for the cold weather.
Do you like joggers?
Here.
Do you like phone cases?
What
sure. What does he look like, the jogger?
Do you like pop sockets? I don't even know what those are.
I'm going to buy 3 t-shirts and a Sherpa blanket right now at www.wondryshop.com/smartless.
You did it again. You only did 2 W's.
www.
It's gonna be 3 W's.
So hard for me. And this is the World Wide Web.
This is
yes. wondryshop.com/smartless. Go. We got all this new SmartLess merchandise. It's so good. The hats are amazing. Listen, for storytellers like us who are creating content. No, but just hear me out. As a content creating storyteller.
Yeah, we got it.
You can come and
we got
load
it.
Up.
We got it.
You know.
Yeah.
Speaking of loads.
Wait, really quick. I just want to talk about this because it's been in the news for several weeks. And I'm so obsessed with the UFOs that they're shooting down. Yeah. And today I was watching the news. And it's funny how they're kind of skirting around it. Like it has to be alien stuff, right? It can't
probably
be.
Probably not, Sean. Probably not.
But it can't just be weather.
Tell
balloons.
Scotty he can stop painting his face. There's not going to be a big
tinfoil out of the windows.
Yeah.
Okay. No,
I think it's a different kind of balloon they're flying, a different kind of surveillance device now.
I think so.
They said it's not surveillance or anything.
No.
Somebody pointed out that if aliens sent these craft over here from wherever the hell, they wouldn't be easily downed by our dumb weapons.
You never know.
Missiles.
You never know.
Right.
They may be dumb too.
They might be dumb too.
But anyway, you know who isn't dumb? Our guest today has quite the stellar and sparkly reputation.
I thought this was Willie's guest. Is this yours?
This is mine, yeah.
Sean's guest. There it is, right there.
You guys
are going
to crap yourself. This is so fun.
Really?
Yeah, I can't believe we get to talk to this fella. I might get a little starstruck, not just because he's celebrated here in the United States, guys, but he's very much celebrated internationally, too.
Really?
By the way, he's not even American. Many fans may not realize he was once cast as a James Dean type and a Rebel Without a Cause type adaptation, which I'm obsessed with. It's the first thing I'm going to talk to him about. And word on the street is there's no one nicer in Hollywood. His first name in Hawaiian means cool breeze over the mountains. Guys, it's the legendary Keanu Reeves.
No.
Cool breeze over the
mountains.
Really?
Wait.
I didn't know that.
This just picked my mood up.
Where are you? Are you in a hotel room right now?
I am. I'm at the Four Seasons in West Hollywood.
We're not paying for that. We're not paying for that.
No. No, I'm doing some John Wick Chapter 4 press for a film that
I can't wait to talk about it.
You put this into your junket schedule. That is a very nice thing to do because that's a haul doing
it's
that stuff.
Fellas. Come on.
No, but you're tired and you've been doing lots of press and then you got to talk to us idiots.
No.
This is so cool.
No. Okay, we're going to up our game. We're going to up our game because what do you got? A couple of round tables after this or you got.
No, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah. All right.
I'm good.
Dude, great to meet you, man.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Been such a huge fan for so long. It's so nice to meet you. Yeah, this is so cool for us.
So, Keanu, let me ask you something. Because we, as a Canadian, we always claim you as a Canadian. What's your Canadian status?
Really?
Where would you put it? But
wait, let me just jump in with that. Beirut.
Oh, okay.
Born in Beirut.
Born in
Canada.
Yeah.
Chinese, Hawaiian, European. Yeah. I mean,
do you want him to answer it? I mean, you can tell me. I can just look up his Wikipedia.
He's trying to show off that he did research.
Yeah, the story of my past is obviously the story of my mother. And so she ran away from home when she was like 15, and she ended up going to Beirut, Lebanon, and as you do, she was born in England, and she met a guy, and they had a kid, and that's me.
Yeah.
And then it's a long story, but my
sounds romantic.
It does. There's a bit of adventure in their journey.
Good.
And then my father had a stepfather who was Canadian, and then there's a bunch of stuff that happened. But long story short, me and my sister and my mom ended up moving into a house in Canada. Mm. And so that's how I became Canadian when I was like seven years old.
Did you go to, you went to school, a lot of school in Canada, in Toronto?
Well, I was raised in Toronto, and I went to Jesse Ketchum.
Did you really?
Yeah, do you know it?
Fuck yeah, I do, man. Yeah.
Really? Easy, Will.
Of course.
Go, look how excited. Now he's up.
I graduated from Leaside High School.
Leaside?
Yeah.
Yeah, the two high schools that were, our grade school fed, what the fuck were they called? Northern and...
Northern, yeah. North Toronto?
I went to NT. I went to North Toronto for 1 year.
You did?
Yeah, I went to North Toronto for 1 year. And I'm trying to remember the other school, Jarvis.
And Jarvis. So my sisters went to Jarvis, and my nephew is graduating from North Toronto this year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, and congratulations to
you. Is that right, eh?
Yeah.
So are you a Maple Leafs fan as well?
I was. I played a lot of ice hockey as a kid.
Yeah.
And I played a lot of hockey.
Yeah.
No more. You don't play in one of these Hollywood leagues or teams?
You know, I never got into the Hollywood leagues. I played a lot when I got here. I played in some leagues in Los Angeles, and I discovered that you could play pickup hockey basically every day.
Yeah.
Really?
And so I played a lot of that, and I'm a goalie.
So is Will. Oh my God, Will. Take it easy.
I played goal at North Toronto at the rink there at North Toronto, right?
Nice rink.
Yeah, great
good
rink.
Ice.
By the way, you should be noted, I got an email today from somebody I know here in LA saying, "Hey, do you want to go and play pickup?" They call it pickup hockey. Of course, we call it shinny, but do you want to go and play some pickup hockey in this league? And I said, man, I just wrote back like 2 hours ago. I was like, I'm too old, man. I can't.
No, but what if they're old too? And then everyone takes it easy in the corners.
Yeah, but you know, and then you end up, you fall or you take a bad hit, and then you're like, what the hell am I doing, man?
What am I doing out here?
What am I doing out here?
And then I went to four different high schools in Toronto. So I went to North Toronto for 2 years, and then I went to a performing arts high school. Got kicked out of that.
Sure.
Really?
Then I went to De La Salle on Avenue Road.
Dude, that De La Salle is on Farnham, and I grew up on Farnham.
What?
I grew up 100 yards from De La Salle.
What? Yeah, you guys probably walked by each other a million times. You're both the same age.
How old are you, Will?
I'm 52.
I'm 58. So, okay.
Close. You were probably walking along the street there when I was like a punk kid. You know,
That's amazing.
Yeah,
wow.
That's wild.
And then there's a Hawaii in there. No,
oh, I'm sorry. Yes, my father's Hawaiian, so he grew up in Hawaii, and then he got into some trouble, and so he ended up going to Beirut, Lebanon, too, and that's where he and my mom met.
Where did your mom go before Beirut? Where was she?
She was born in England, and she went to Paris.
Wow.
She was interested in fashion and design, and so I think she worked at a fashion house, atelier.
So you guys just moved around constantly.
Yeah, yeah. Even in Toronto, there's a lot of, I got a lot of gypsy in my story.
Yeah, you got a lot of good stuff cursing through you.
Yeah.
Is your sister in the arts?
She's in the equestrian arts.
Okay.
Whoa.
Or she was in the arts. Yeah, so she was into horses, training horses, riding, could do anything, everything on a horse. And that was her deal.
And my husband, Scotty, he is an army brat. He moved 17 times before he was like, 20 or something like that.
Wow.
But moving around made him want to desire to be stable in one place and never move again. Are you like that? Or did that upbringing make you feel, are you drawn to like different experiences all the time?
Hmm. I think both.
Oh, okay.
If you can be both. I mean, I think...
You can.
I mean, I love traveling. I love new experiences. I mean, I think, you know, with the arts that we're in, you know, if it works out, you get a chance to travel around and,
yeah.
you know, meet folks. And so I love that experience. But it's also important. I mean, I love a good couch, a little home.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Good God.
And then, of course, then the itch starts.
yeah. yeah, exactly.
And then it's a fever, yeah. and then you're distracted, and then
how long are you good on the couch without any work or without any work that you know is coming up? Because that
Jay just
that's
wants to measure
thing.
It. You just want to measure yeah. it to yours.
It's yeah. like if you know work's coming up, like you have a start date on something, I can sit on my couch for 6 months, yeah. but if I don't know anything's coming, I'm about 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, you're an unemployed. Yeah. I call it the working on working.
Yeah,
yeah. I, you know, it really depends on what the journey you had before you're unemployed.
Right, right.
You know, like if you've been working and it's been really intense for 5 or 6 months, you know, you come out of that, you know, you might not be thinking about being unemployed and working on working for a day or two, but right. 2 months.
Yeah, you don't do you do jobs that they shoot a lot of nights. There's a lot of action.
Yeah,
there's
yummy.
Weapons.
Yes.
You
love
but that. I mean, like, you don't have like easy days on your movies. No rom coms for you.
No, well, I like a good rom com. I got to work with Ali Wong. I did a couple of days on an Ali Wong show.
She's funny.
She's amazing. And but no, I've had the fortune to do some pretty epic shooting. Like, I mean, working on Matrix 2 and 3 was 22 months.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And all the John Wicks are like, that ain't no phone in.
Yeah. No, there's no phones.
Well, I remember seeing that first John Wick. Well, first of all, I mean, now that you've opened, you open up the
Matrix.
Yeah, I had
a bunch before that.
So, okay, well, I mean, everybody's got a bunch. I mean, John, Jesus, why are you arguing with me? I want to talk to Keanu.
He's tired. He's not going to deal with that one.
I'm really tired. And so I remember being in New York, 1998, when Matrix came out, I want to say. And
I know
because I have a weird thing with dates. And I couldn't have been more blown away. I had no preconceived notion because we weren't inundated at that time all the time with the phones and stuff of leading up to stuff. So you could kind of go into a movie clean and just for what it was. Fuck, man. That was such a game changer for me, that movie.
Did you know while you were filming it with the effects and all of the stuff that it was a game changer?
I mean, you never know while you're making something, but
yeah.
I knew with the Wachowskis, the directors, I knew their vision was extraordinary. I knew the script was extraordinary and the cast. And then once it got all put together, I mean, I think of that film as a perfect film.
Yeah, it's amazing. Perfect.
And it is like, for me too, watching that film, because I hadn't seen it with the visual effects and all of that, just like...
Yeah,
that's great.
I remember, Keanu, my oldest son is 14, and I remember just within the last couple of years, the moment of like when I was like, we're going to watch The Matrix, man. and he's like, well, I go, we're going to watch that, because I wanted him to have the experience that I had.
But you know, you've always been in the greatest sense of the word, and I don't have a better word than this, but a real director snob, like in the way that like you don't work in Keanu Reeves vehicles, you work in director vehicles. Mm-hmm. It seems like to me, like you really appreciate someone who's got a real plan, a real vision, and you kind of work to service that as opposed to, yeah, I want to be the star and let's just find any director that'll do. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of you to say. I have, obviously, as you guys know, I mean, you want a director with a vision. And I've had the chance to work with some directors who have been able to realize their vision in such extraordinary ways. Mm-hmm. And so to be on those sets, to be working with those artists, is the best, man. You know?
You know, Ken, it seems to me that you have the choices that you have seemed to make all the way through a very long career. You have done so much different stuff. You know, certain people, you can see them, they get sort of into a theme thematically throughout their career. You can see this sort of through line. You've done stuff. You have just zigged and zagged and consistently done different stuff. And maybe that's, I don't know, maybe now I'm going to draw the line back to like your upbringing, sort of moving around a lot. Like you like new experience, new stuff. You've done period stuff. You've done the action stuff. I'm thinking of Speed with Sandy and, or, you know, and then.
You can't pigenhole you.
It's cool. It's actually an adventure.
Yeah, Bill and Ted's
my own
like,
private Idaho.
Dude, it's fucking. No, it's first crazy. Of all, Bill and Ted's.
Yeah.
Excellent adventure.
I mean, that was a game changer.
One
for
of the
you
most quotable career. Movies. I mean, I was a teenager. I was 18 or something when it came out. We were fucking dying.
Oh, we
watched it a million times. But yeah, so you start and you do all these different things. And it seems like you have like a thirst for that. It kind of goes into like taking jobs for the right reasons, right? Like, is that something that are you constantly being like, yeah, I want to do something that I haven't thought of or that's scary or that's.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, growing up is, you know, I always wanted to do as many different things as I could. You know, that's the hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, you know, oftentimes lead roles have certain expectations on them, and whether in any genre, you know, and then there's also times we're working in independent or being, you know, in supporting roles, you get to kind of do some interesting kind of nooks and crannies and have different voices, different tones, and tell stories in different ways. So that if you have the fortune, you know, if you have the opportunity to do a studio film or and then an independent film or something like that, then it's the cinema, you know, getting a chance to play and again just tell different stories and
I
play different
that.
Roles and try and do that.
By the way, I don't know if anybody ever brings this up, but Dracula is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I think Dracula, I mean, I don't know. I got kicked in the teeth, and maybe deservedly so for my English accent, but they may, anyway.
No, one of my favorites. One of my favorites.
But I think, my English accent aside, I think that's a wonderful film. And I think
incredible.
Francis Ford Coppola made a work of art that was maybe a little ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, the performance, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
God, amazing. So amazing. Good. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Are you, anyway. do you remind your team constantly to sort of find really interesting things as opposed to super lucrative things or star vehicles or things like that? Or can you take responsibility for that? Because it just seems like everything you do is always interesting, and it's never down the middle.
That's very kind of you to say.
But it's true.
It's true, man. It's true.
And I'll bet you get a lot of offers to do things that would be a lot easier, a lot more predictable, a lot safer, a lot more lucrative, perhaps. And so has it been the same team forever and they just kind of know what makes you tick or?
Yeah, that's the representation story has been pretty consistent with the people I've worked with over the years, but that's changed over the years as well. But I think, at least for me personally, it's always been like kind of what I was talking about, like how can we have a variety? What's the filmmaker? Where's it being made? What's the script? What's the story?
Yeah.
What's the role?
Right.
We'll be right back.
Thank you to Organic Valley for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley Dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. It just tastes better. You can taste the organic. For me, like I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose Organic Valley half and half even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter
and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. And do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
Hey, SmartList listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
And now, back to the show.
Well, first of all, where'd you get the bug to do it? Because when you were in...
Why are we artists?
Yeah.
Unlicked cubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because when you're in Toronto, like
cubs.
When people like you that just are transcend, you know, whatever. You we just said it a million times how incredible your career is. Is it something that finds you or you find it and why?
I kind of grew up in a showbiz background. My mother was a costume designer.
Oh.
I had a stepfather who was, you know, at the time was, you know, I just finished directing some plays on Broadway when I was a little bean. And then growing up, my mother says that I came to her when I was 15 and asked if it was okay if I'm an actor.
At 15?
At 15, and she said, yes, of course, son, whatever you want to do. And then I started. So I was pretty self-motivated and, you know, enrolled in a theater arts program, which, will, you know, you might even know, the it was up by North Toronto, Leah Poslin's theater group. I don't know if you ever came across that. But
no, but yeah.
There was a wonderful person there named Rose Dubin. But anyway... So I was super self-motivated. You know, I auditioned for the Performing Arts High School, and mm-hmm. I was at the library. I was reading. I was just, you know, taking acting classes. Uta Hagen, Respect for Acting. I'm 17.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, doing the Stanislavski.
Yeah.
The voice work. I ended up getting an agent at Leah Poslin's because I was playing Mercutio in Romeo and Juliet. And so I guess that was my first big break.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And you're like, this tastes pretty great.
Yeah, I got an agent. I started doing some commercials, sold some cornflakes and some Coca-Cola.
And you drove all the way out here by yourself from Toronto, and you're still not an American citizen, which I think is kind of cool.
It's cool and not cool. I got in my first car when I was 20, and I drove to Hollywood. And of course, when I got here, they wanted to change my name.
And, really?
Yeah, they were like, Keanu, it's too ethnic.
And I was like, oh, Lord.
I mean, literally, like, the day I arrived, I mean, I remember I had driven across the country, and I remember they told me, and I was, like, stomping up and down along the beach in Santa Monica going, what the fuck?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know? And then, like, and then I was like, okay, well, what's my name going to be? And I was like, Templeton. Or like, anyway.
Did they pitch you any names, or did they ask you to go think up some?
Yeah, so eventually I came up with my first and middle initial. So I was Casey Reeves.
No way. No
for
way.
For a couple of...
That
couple
would
of,
work.
Yeah,
that Casey would be Reeves. Good.
Oh, that's my awesome. God, please.
But then, you'd be a great Casey.
No, man, but then I had like auditions and they'd be like, Casey... And I was like, wouldn't even look up. And eventually I went back to my agents and I was like, I can't change my name. Yeah. Like one of the first play I ever did was I was playing John Proctor. And one of the lines is just like, you know, because it is my name, because I can have no other. And I was the Crucible.
That's a signal.
I was in the Crucible. And I just, that was just running through my head, you know?
And so with Ted, was Bill and Ted's the one thing that really, like, how did that come to you? And that, because that kind of put you on the map for us to know who you were, right?
Yeah, I think for me, probably, you know, another big break that we all need is, I was in a film called River's Edge.
Yeah. Oh, my God, right, of course.
With Crispin Glover.
With the amazing, beautiful Crispin Glover.
Yeah.
Dude, that movie
what
is...
What I do for my fucking friends. and to watch that artist work, you know, talk about being and seeing an artist kind of deal with what the expectation of a role could be or how you could even act, how you could even be in a scene. You know, for me, it was a revelation.
So he was doing it completely differently than what you thought it was going to be just reading the script, yeah?
I think everybody's standing there in the room.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was just, but he had the essence of what the role was.
Yeah.
And he had his unique voice on it, which I think we all do, right? We all have our own voice. But the way that he was performing and understanding the form of acting, too, the way that he understood the camera, the way he understood choreography, and where he would go with his voice, the choices that he would make, was something to me that was revelatory.
I do love that part of what we do. You know, like the audience doesn't read the script before they see the movie, so they have no preconceived
notions. They don't know what they don't know.
So they get what they get, and they don't get upset unless somebody sucks. And, you know, like usually people don't suck, you
That's
know,
true.
The people that are taking these big swings and you just, but I bet if the audience would think for 1 second, like if you read all these lines on a page, would you imagine this kind of performance? And 9 times out of 10, the answer would be no. That's what everybody on the set is dealing with. So the instinct is to criticize it and say, oh, no, that you can't play the character like that. You know, a director will come up and say, hey, easy with that. And let's go over here and take the character this direction, you know. But the audience is never going to do that. So if an actor just needs to push back just a little bit and say, well, hang on, I'm still going to get us there. But it might be a little wiggly through here. Like, just let me do that. Let me play it like this. And
with that, you get, you know, so many artists, but, you know, you get, like, Christopher Walken.
Yeah, exactly. You can't write that. You just, that's performance, and you can't give it a false negative because it sounds and looks different than what you imagined.
Do you remember Crispin Glover in Wild at Heart? And he's got all those flashback scenes, and he's the guy who's got he's got cockroaches in his underwear, and he's cutting bread. I love Wild at Heart. It's one of my favorite movies. And you just hear I forget his character's name. Like, what are you doing? And then he's cutting, and he goes, I'm making my lunch. And he's just in this like underwear stuffed with, and you're like, what a wild choice. And you just know that David Lynch gave him a ton of room.
But Keanu, like, you know, not that there isn't art and challenges in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and the sequel and Speed and all of these things. They are, you know, what people call, you know, popcorn movies, but they're just as difficult of roles and movies to make. Did you have any kind of trepidation from going to being so trained to going into these kinds of things and worrying about the perception of them?
At the time, no, man, I was trying to work.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And,
for sure.
And I, you know, and I loved, like, for the script of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the audition process for that film is almost legendary. I mean, I think everybody read for that, and it was...
Oh, really?
But I got to meet Alex Winter
at
that time, and we just had one of those things where you, like, you're both in the waiting room to go audition, and you're like, hey, hey. And then we started talking, and he's like, yeah, I ride bike, because I have my helmet. I go, like, I ride. And he's like, yeah, what else? And then he's like, I went to NYU film school, and he started talking about movies, and, like, and then we were working on the, we started to audition, and, you know, with those roles, he and I both independently came to the idea of Commedia dell'arte, and the physicality of these kind of classical commedia characters. And so, like, there was Bill and there was Ted. And so what was the physicalness? How did they play off of each other in a kind of Punch and Judy kind of way? But, like, and so we had an instant kind of vernacular and a way to approach these roles that was really exciting and hilarious.
Yeah,
it was just so much fun to play those.
And that was something that you guys, first of all, written by the great Ed Solomon too, right? I mean, great writer.
Chris Matheson.
Yeah, just so, and was that, once you guys kind of keyed into that, you know, like you said, there were so many people auditioning for it. Was it just like you hit
and
it?
And George Carlin. And then you have George Carlin.
Oh, George Carlin. I forgot that Carlin was in that, too. Yeah. What was that like, man?
Man, he was so nice. He's super low-key. He and Alex would go talk politics and do all of those things.
Yeah.
He was so lovely. I remember he's one of the few people I've asked for an autograph. And I was kind of like, sir, can I have an autograph? And he was like, sure. And he wrote, Keanu, fuck you. And then I was like, oh my God, George just said that to me. I was like, cool. And I took it so personally. And then I found out down the years that he would actually write that to other people.
Yeah.
It wasn't special. But it's special that you did that, man.
Is there somebody that you got over your years, other than George or these people, that you were just completely blown away, starstruck by?
Gosh, so many.
So many.
So many. I mean, I asked for an autograph from Lou Reed for a friend.
Mm-hmm. Sure. For a friend.
He was just like, shoo. And then he kind of scribbled it. I think I gave him
carved it into your hand.
Some pathetic piece of paper. But he's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Dude, what do you think about... It seems like, man, again, I just love, you've just had such an interesting, like, really, really unique trajectory in longevity. And then it seems like the last couple of years, I feel like every 5 years, people reappreciate you. Like, a new group of people are like, oh, my God, Keanu Reeves. And the last couple of years, it's true. And people go like... And then you've just become this thing in the last couple of years, like everybody has recognized, and it's obviously because of a lifetime of being a good guy, people are starting to really recognize that about you, and you've kind of crossed over, and I don't mean to embarrass you, into this kind of weird, look, man, whether you like it or not, and you can avert your eyes so you don't have to look at me when I say this, you've been a sex symbol for a long time. None of us have that weight. And now
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, and then you've kind of, and so you're like an actor and a sex symbol, and then you've now gone into this kind of like iconic status,
old
like with culturally. No, I mean, by the way, you're 58.
I know,
I'm not coming on to you.
Same.
You look great for 58.
Yeah.
He is actually a great match for you, though, Will. I mean, think about his passions.
We would be great where if either of us were gay. We'd be perfect for each other. Yeah. But it must be kind of a bit of a trip because you're like, I'm still me, and you haven't done anything different. You get up every morning and have your coffee the same way, and then all of a sudden you're right. Has it been kind of trippy in a way?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us have kind of had the experience of the before and the now with communication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, certainly now, in the now, you know, to your point, Will, I mean, I think right now nice is nice and can be super nice, and I'm really grateful for it. I do know that that is fickle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, memes and stuff like that, you know, I remember the first time someone showed me sad Keanu, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was used to paparazzi photos, but I wasn't used to a paparazzi, you know, I could see how, like, you know, I was used to tabloid communication, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so this became, that was the before, and now the now is something else. And, you know, and for me, I was like, I was just eating a sandwich, and I was like in editing, and I was like kind of like down, and like, and then I came up with, in order to kind of self-preservation, it was like, you can see a picture that can tell 1,000 words, but that's always not going to be all the story to tell.
Right.
But in a meme, that kind of lensing or focusing, and then the way it gets shared or transmitted. Anyway, long story short, that was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah. But,
and weird. It was funny and weird, right?
It's fucking weird.
It's weird. And like, here you are on a candle and you're carrying a lamb. And, you know.
Do you ever think about the kids today who are coming up who were, you know, think about like when you were coming up and you were doing Bill and Ted's and all these great movies and you shot out of a cannon. Can you imagine having to have the scrutiny that there is now?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's scrutiny and responsibilities, right?
Right.
I mean, I think...
And you're a kid, so you don't know anybody. So you're kind of dumb. We're all dumb when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I unfortunately kept that going. But, I I've heard of just a lot of artists having the pressure to be on social media in order to get a job.
Yeah.
Right, like to even get in the room,
how many
or have
followers
an audition,
do they have?
And yeah, the following kind of aspect to the kind of capitalistic idea of it. But I bet it's tough. I bet it's tough, but also I'm sure it's pleasurable for some people too, right?
Yeah.
So and there's artistry to it, and involvement and creativity. But I think the now is definitely more intense. Pressure on your private life than the before.
Yeah.
I mean, the before had a lot of pressure too, but I think the now is even more.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, when you said you were 58, it's like Keanu Reeves is going to be 60 in 2 years. You've gotten a lot of shit done.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've been busy, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I know, but I haven't hit the 100. I haven't hit the 100.
I want to be 100 too.
But 100 years old, but also 100 films.
100 films.
Oh, how
films.
Many you got?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm in the 70s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you got time. You got time.
I got plenty of time.
Just don't get stuck directing a bunch of them, and you know,
right?
You'll lose a bunch of time.
Yeah. Wait. Speaking of though, so I want to get into John Wick because I have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
So, first of all. Let me just start. We do have a connection because, and I'm kind of stating the obvious here, we have the same personal trainer.
Yeah.
So Patrick Murphy is fantastic.
The best.
I love him. He's the greatest. And he's trained you quite a bit, as I understand, and he's nothing but incredible kind words to say about you.
That's tragic, and
like me, he's always blown away. A lot of people are blown away by the fact that you do all your own stunts.
I don't do stunts.
But you had to in the first John Wick. You're
action.
Falling on your back.
I do action.
He doesn't call them stunts.
Oh, sorry. You do action.
First of all, an illusionist. You guys have the same trainer. I mean, is he so exhausted after working with Keanu that by the time he gets to you, he just...
he's deep into fuck it?
There's a real fucking... I mean, this is... Okay, this is... Let's...
Stand up and make a bagel, Sean. Stand up and make a bagel. Let's see. Here we go. There it is.
Yeah. So you do your own action. Is that right?
Well, no, it's a big difference, right?
Okay.
Because
okay.
if I'm there, if John Wick gets hit by a car, I'm not doing that. That's a stunt.
Yes.
If John Wick is in a fight scene, I can do the fighting. And if I can do a judo throw or if I'm going to fall on the ground.
But let me say something.
But not jump off a building. I'm sorry.
No, but let me just say something. Because you fall, because I've seen them. And so I'm looking at them, and it's your face falling on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I do. Well,
that's
falling
action.
But that's the lens, right? So maybe I'll do the double action. I'll do the...
All right.
I mean, listen, I get to ride some horses. I get to drive some cars. I get to, like, you know, run and jump and do a lot of, you know, interactive fight sequences.
But Patrick praises you like no end because he just says you have such a high threshold for pain. You're like the second if you hurt yourself, you're back in the game right away. Like I heard or I read somewhere that you... The first day or the first week you're shooting John Wick 2, that you injured yourself and you just got up and just kept going. Like, it's like a football player.
Yeah, there is. But that's the kind of the joy of it too, isn't it? Like, it's not
easy. I don't
know
about that.
I mean, it's like not easy,
once you get past 45, it's not super enjoyable. Yeah. I mean, at 58,
I know, but if you can do it, right? If you can try, if you can climb the mountain. Right.
But doing it, it's got to be a lot harder now.
Who cares, man? Hard, schmard, whatever.
Are you having to?
No, but shoot. Come on, man.
I fucking love this guy.
It's raining.
Yeah,
it's hot. It's whatever. It's like you're not comfortable. Whatever,
yeah,
man. Get out of here.
Like, Keanu, let's tell go. Bateman, you fucking let's go, go. Bateman. Let's go, what the man. Fuck, dude?
Fuck it! All right, listen. But wait, then I heard this too, from Patrick told me this, that people stop you on the street and give you feedback or ideas about the John Wick series.
Oh, yeah.
You should do this, you should do that. Is that true?
Yeah, once in a while. And there's some good ideas and stuff, but...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the world, I mean, I think that's what's really...
I'd be like, I think
what
I got
really
it.
I appreciated, I really appreciate with John Wick how the world has opened up, right? With the idea of the high table. Mm-hmm. There's so much mystery in this, in films, but in a weird way, somehow it all makes sense. And you authentically feel that everyone has a past.
Yes, I love that. Because the first one is like, you fucking kill my dog, I fucking kill you. And you're off to the races, right? Yeah. And that's what the thing is. And then it just kind of grew and grew and grew. I'm kidding. It's deeper than that. But it grew and grew
but
from there.
Really. But yes. Yeah.
But not really.
But it's so cool. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Revenge and freedom.
Is there anything you heard over the years in that feedback from your fans? Like, what is the main thing people say? Like,
I think people try to like connect why it all is happening. And they try to connect, like, maybe my wife is she really dead? Is she part of the high table? Is the character Winston, is he really pulling all of the strings? What's the Bowery King? Is it a fever dream? Is John Wick, is this just, you know? So we have people trying to kind of connect dots and try and kind of get a big overview of the story and get to
it's really cool. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
And we will be right back. Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell you, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye, Seps.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
All right, back to the show.
When you do a film like the John Wick films, because they are so physical, when you rap, what is your sort of recovery? Are you like, I need 4 weeks on a beach or 4 weeks at home with the door shut, or I need to like go to Paris? Like, what do you do to like recover from those really grueling movies?
After when I get home after I finish filming them?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It starts with, collapse.
Yeah.
And then, but it's an interesting thing. I don't know if you guys have found this, but like, I don't know, coming off the road or coming off the series or, you know, the work that you're doing, you can be really tired, but then there's also a restlessness.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if
yeah.
you've experienced that. Like, you know, I'm just going to stay home. Well, I'm just going to get up and go get something from the fridge or, you know, but there can also be the periods where like, don't talk to me. No, I don't want to work. But then you're like, but there is a restlessness. And then once I get through the restlessness from it, then it's like I go into a world that I don't quite understand in the sense of like, how do I rest or who am I? What is the meaning of life? Uh-huh. What am I doing? You're trying to reconnect with people, you know, because making films of that kind of time scale, you're in a time machine. You know everyone around you. Then you go away and you go down the river on your kind of independent journey. They're going down a river and then you have to meet up at the other side of that, you know, the distance of travel. So much of their lives have gone on. Yes, you can have contact, but you're not involved, you know? And so it's kind of in a weird way syncing up to those around you and syncing back up to your life, you know, at the same time that you're totally exhausted, restless, questioning everything. And then, of course, you have the fear and desperation of being unemployed.
Yeah.
And then you want to, you know, then you're back into it.
Is it as much of a draw for you as it was when you were just trying to make something of your career and something of yourself and carve something out? Because it seems like you're very respectful of life itself, like the real stuff, as opposed to, you know, career stuff and making fake life. And having done so much, do you start, and I'm sort of projecting myself, right? I mean, I'm 54 and you start thinking about, well, we're closer to death than we are to birth. And like,
oh,
you know,
sorry, no way. 54.
Well, I'm just, you know, like at what point do you like, what's the right ratio? You know, do you think about, well, there are certainly, I'd like to play a role like this and a role like that, or direct them this or go do a play or whatever it is. Like, do you have certain things you still want to check off?
Yeah.
Before you take a bigger
before I die
bite of life,
yeah. Before you kick it,
and before I kick it, yeah. I mean, to answer your question, I guess part of it is I still love acting, and I still love the creativity of it.
Yeah,
and I still have ambition and hope.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. I still. Want to do good work and work with people, and so I still want to do that. And
I love the goal of 100. That's 100.
Yeah, and when I want to be 100, that would be fun. Yeah.
Any big thing pulling you in life? Like, do you have certain places you'd like to travel to? Do you have a sport?
Well,
you'd
I'm
like
hoping
to
do a play on Broadway.
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't done that. So
yeah,
I'm gonna do that.
There you go. That sounds good.
Like Sean's got his
Sean's
play
playing at the
soon.
Tabasco Theater. It's gonna be hot.
Tabasco.
Yeah.
Isn't
they
that
sponsored
the Belasco.
Oh, nice.
Belasco. How do you know that?
Oh, that's
how do you know
good.
That? Isn't that
the Tabasco? Hey guys, check me
everything's
out. Everything's
hot. It's a hot night at the theater. It's a hot theater.
You come
it's
in hot. Cool, you leave hot.
Hey,
listen, I feel like this would be a generic question for anyone else other than you, but what's your favorite action movie?
Oh, shit.
One of your favorite action movies.
Or one of them, yeah.
To answer.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God.
And was there one?
You'd think I'd have that, like, yeah, ready something. Up my sleeve, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, here's the list of the favorite action
Come
movies.
Come on.
I don't think I do. I don't have one.
Okay, well, what do we mean by an action?
Like, you know, there's action.
I mean, because it could be like it could be Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon.
Or it could be Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It could be Raiders of the, it could be Rollerball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you
is
said
that, is that an action movie?
Rollerball,
or is that
sure it is.
A science fiction.
Yeah, no, that was good. No, but you almost said Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Could it be Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that car gets hairy.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, but Sean, I mean, define. I guess to answer your question, I mean, I grew up, I mean, like, what is it? Like The Towering Inferno? I mean, what about all of the Chariot movies, right? Yeah. What about the Westerns? What about
Gumball Rally?
What action movies are we talking? What about, I mean, I guess formative, I mean,
I don't mean just people like moving in a scene. I just meant like people fighting.
I know fighting and blowing stuff.
I'm kidding.
Good
I'm
for
kidding.
You, Keanu.
I mean, define it.
Listen, Keanu, John Wick 4, right? 4. There's 4. It was released in March, and it's how great is? I can't wait to see it.
That's kind.
Yeah, thanks. I can't wait. I'm a big fan of you and those movies and all your movies. We've taken up a lot of your time. Thank you for being here. We love you.
You're the man. You're absolutely the man.
You're very cool.
Fellas, thank you very much. It was nice to meet y'all.
I'm jealous that Sean had you as his guest. You've been on my wish list for like 2.5 years, so I'm so happy you're here.
I can support that.
Yeah.
Stop ducking me out there. You know, I'd like to spend more than just 57 minutes with you.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Cheers,
come
man.
Have dinner with us one night, all right?
All right.
That'd be so fun.
That'd be
cool.
Great.
Thank you.
Right. Do you live in Los Angeles, Keanu?
I do.
Okay,
I do.
I'll just text me the address. All right,
cool.
All right, we love you. Thank you for being here, pal.
Thanks for doing this,
thanks,
Keanu.
Thanks, man.
Thank
cheers,
you, buddy.
Guys. Thank Take you care. So much.
See you, pal.
Bye.
Hey, guys, it's Keanu Reeves.
Yeah,
that was Keanu Reeves. Did you recognize him?
I did recognize him.
He has not changed.
He's not changed a bit. 58 years old.
Exactly the same.
He's 32.
He looks 32. Jason, you look like his older brother.
You son of a
You know what I mean?
Bitch. but wait, how he kind of skated over the fact that I know he didn't call them stunts, but action sequences, whatever.
He has too much respect for the people who do
stunts. So unassuming. He's
so unassuming. And it's all real.
But I'm not dissing them. I'm just saying, you know, take after take after take, movie after movie after movie, your body just, I don't understand.
Can you guys relate to this? When you were younger, did you have, like, I didn't have an older brother. So, but I had guys who were, like, my dad, my godfather's son, Ward Brown, was my idol, and he was a couple years, he was like 3 years older than me, and everything he did, I wanted to do. He played everything because I, like, looked up to him. I was like, blah, blah, blah. Keanu, I could see, is one of those guys that I've always, he's like a few years older, and like, I just want to do it. What's he doing? Like,
totally.
He's
totally.
Like, right? And he's got that, he lives in that same space that, for me. Totally. I feel the same way about Pitt. I'm like, and everything, oh, hey man, how's that going? Yeah. What are you doing? Like, yeah, we're just, no way. I will do that.
It's like a cool factor I'll never achieve.
Yeah.
Well, you started out nice with it. You shared the same body instructor. What's his name?
Body instructor.
What's it called? Guys, my brain's broken today. Okay?
A trainer, like a personal trainer,
like a body trainer, right?
Oh, dude, is that what it is?
A body instructor. Listen.
Oh, but you know, but he also seems—he's so humble and unassuming.
Yeah,
and
it's real, and it's all so real.
Doesn't need any attention. He's almost shy, yet he's in a public role.
Yeah,
I find that admirable and interesting.
I didn't even get to the thing that I said in his intro. Which was I wanted to ask him, the whole point of my intro was to ask him about, he starred in Paula Abdul's music video, Rush Rush, in the 90s. And I was like, why is Keanu Reeves in this video? It was so wild. I remember it was like a big deal because I was obsessed with that video. Anyway,
maybe he was dating her at the time.
That's what I wanted to ask. I was
he's way too discreet. He never would have said.
Call him back, Sean.
Okay.
Let's get him back. This is the first time we ever want to get it. We want to get a guest back. We didn't get to a lot of stuff because there's so much to talk to him about.
I know. I want to talk more about the Matrix stuff, but anyway.
You did a terrible job asking questions, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, today. You're going to lose your nomination next year.
You are. Oh, you've already lost. You've already lost. You're never getting back to Host of the Year.
Well, I can probably see that award go.
Bye.
You're just using a buy for buy, huh?
That's right.
Okay.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. So, listener, hi.
Before we go, we wanted to introduce the audience to someone very special today.
Please meet someone special.
Smartless Media is doing our very first podcast called Bad Dates with the amazing, incredible Jamila Jamil.
Hi.
Guys, welcome, Jamila Jamil.
Do I clap myself?
Yes. Yeah,
clap yourself
enthusiastically.
Yeah. Clap yourself
Thank
in.
You.
You can give yourself the clap.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of giving yourself the clap, this is called Bad Dates, right? So,
unbelievable segue.
Yeah.
The show's called Bad Dates, yeah.
Yeah, and are you, well, tell the listener basically what it's about beyond what the title says.
It is relatively self-explanatory. It's just me and some of my favorite comedians and people coming on to disclose the sordid details of the silliest and weirdest and grossest dates they've ever had. And the reason I love this subject is because it's very bonding. It never fails to ignite a conversation wherever you are. It brings barriers down. But also, there's just a democracy to it, because it just doesn't matter how hot you are, how smart, how rich, how famous. No one is exempt from a shitty fucking date.
Right. But I would guess that you have never had a bad date because you seem to know how to communicate in any way possible to make it all work. Like you can answer the questions or you can ask the questions. Like some people just don't know how to do one.
It comes to a standstill when I'm not going to never say aroused, but when I'm interested, all of my skills fly out the window. And like, I have no way of receiving a sort of social cue. So really, you have to be inside of me for me to understand that you're interested. Oh. And obviously, given the current climate, that's not appropriate.
But you're saying if you like the other person, you start to lock up a little bit?
I lock up and I shut down. Yeah,
Will's got that with Charlize Theron. He can't. He just everything sees is up.
You don't need to go wide with that.
No, she knows. Don't worry, she's
it's
aware.
It's fine. Well, we all have that with Charlize Theron. Yeah.
Have you had a favorite guest yet on Bad Dates at all? I mean, anybody comes to mind?
Who could you be hinting at?
I don't know.
Sean, you've been a wonderful guest on the show.
Sean, well, give us a taste, Sean. What was your?
Well, I don't
want to
ruin
date?
It, but it starts out with me meeting a guy in a bar with workout pants in a bar, and we're both super drunk. We go back to his place, and before we get to the goods part of the story, he asks, do you mind if I microwave a burrito really quick before we go at it? I swear to God.
Not a euphemism.
By the way, I would have loved that he said, you cool if I shower real quick before we keep talking?
It was a real dream. Sean was on with Conan O'Brien. We've had Tig Notaro. We've had Nikki Glaser, Margaret Cho, Paul Feig.
Wait. Conan's been on a date?
I know. Just
that's
the one.
Yeah.
And it was a disaster, thankfully. So he came on the show to talk about it. But it is just it is quite astonishing how much I've learned about a lot of very famous people. And also just how many people have shit their pants on a date. I don't know if that's
literally
something that any of you have literally shit their pants.
No way.
It's the great equalizer. The asshole is the great equalizer of humanity. And I think it's been overlooked politically, but we've uncovered it on the show. Yeah.
Fascinating. Wow. I want to hear all about that. I am tuning in.
Oh, by the way, you just got Jason's attention. The dates and the hooking up, fine. No, it's fine. But once you get into the
short
shitting,
the anus.
That is
the bowels of the story.
Wheelhouse. Sean, am I right?
Yeah.
Oh, could you call the show Shit Show?
I basically should, but I mean, there are varieties on what we're learning on the show, but it is just, I just want people out there to know that you are not alone if you think you are. Like, the stories are so wild and so funny and so absurd, and we're not shitting on single life, because God knows married life is fucking its own nightmare, but we're just trying to, like, have an intimate, funny conversation about something that I think is deeply relatable. My story, amazingly, didn't involve any shit, but I've had my own, like, extraordinary disaster. Sean, I've told you the story before, I can share it with you if you want an
please
idea.
Please do. Give us a taste of how
much disaster is out there. I tried to have my first ever one night stand, because I've only kissed six people, right?
Come on.
But it is sadly true. I started very late, and then I was slow on the uptake. And so I thought, you know what? In my 30s, I'm going to have my hoe era that I've always dreamed of. It's going to happen. And I got the sense that I was about to have my first ever booty call. A man that I'd been sort of casually going on a few dates with, just hanging out with. We hadn't done anything yet. He texted me and said, shall I come over? And I was like, 11 p.m. I'm definitely going to get my first... So you can even hear what's happening to my voice just talking about it. I suddenly become like a bit more like Mary Poppins about the whole thing. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get a casual shag. It's so exciting. Uh-huh. So he turns up at my house, 11 p.m. on the dot, walks into my apartment. I've only been living in America for a week at this point, right? So I don't know anyone or anything. And he takes three steps in and collapses face first on the ground. And all of his front teeth, we're talking at least 12 here, shoot out of his mouth across my entire living room. So now there is blood and teeth all over my room, and he's having a seizure.
No.
So I've never seen someone have a seizure in real life before. And I panic. I think he's going to die. I call 911, which is also slightly exciting because, you know, I'm English and they call that in the movies. So I feel very Hollywood right now. I call 911. They send in the fucking police, turn up, the fire brigade, the paramedics. Everyone comes rolling into my house. I now have about 25 men in my apartment, which is not how I'd expected.
And you're just in lingerie, right? You were ready to go.
No, not quite, but close. And this man is covered in blood. He's split his chin all the way open, and they're trying to resuscitate him. They manage to bring him to, and they're like, "Excuse me, sir. Like, you know, have you taken anything? Do you have epilepsy?" And he's like, "Oh, I might have had some cocaine." But he was like, "But I always have cocaine." And I was like, "Oh, it's a small red flag. It's not a huge one. It's a little." No. It was just I think the word "always" at his age felt slightly disturbing.
Wasn't going to be a short date.
No, exactly. And then they were like, "Have you taken anything else?" And he was going, "No." And he's having to treat like this because he's got no teeth now.
Oh my God.
And so they start putting the blanket over him to take him out. And as they go past his cock, he gets a raging erection, which feels inappropriate in the moment. And they're like, "Sir, have you taken anything else?"
Right.
And he turns around and he looks directly at me and makes full eye contact and just goes, "I might have had some Viagra." Which is, I might have had some Viagra for those who don't speak toothless.
No, that's a combination you don't want.
Yeah.
Huh?
So then you hook up.
So you get
him. Quickly sucked him off.
Right, there you go.
And sent him on his way. He got carried out in on a stretcher in the middle of West Hollywood of a quite famous actor. So we had to put a blanket over his cock, but also one over his face.
Wow.
And they're just like pitching a tent through West Hollywood as he gets taken to the hospital. So that was my first and last attempt at a booty call, and have been in a long-term relationship since a week from that day.
Wait to get you drunk one day and find out who that guy was.
I can't believe Thoreau has never told us this story.
Right. He's usually pretty open about his mistakes.
Normally you'd think that he would.
Jamila,
that is what can happen.
I know. See, I live for those kinds of stories. And you can see how everybody has one or two or five or ten of these horrible
Ask
stories.
Ask her if she's ever forgotten a line on stage. You know, got any weird theater
stories?
Hey,
give me a really horrible theater story. They're just as dynamic.
No, you have to tune into Smartless for that one. But for all bad date stories, tune in.
Yes.
To Bad Dates. When do we get to start airing these things?
So March 20th, it'll be on Wondery Plus and Amazon Music. And then March 27th, it'll be on all services. And you can just sit back, relax, and enjoy the truly horrible tales of some people's dating experiences. It's just amazing what we'll go through to get a shag, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's true.
Well,
that is true.
That's a quote. Well, we're lucky, Jamila, that we have you taking us through this. This is going to be so great. We're really excited.
And
you're our first one.
You're our virgin.
Yeah, you're
podcast.
Our first one.
Thank you. No pressure.
Thank you
at
for
all.
Signing up.
No pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm a massive fan of all of you, so I'm going to try my best not to let you down. But I don't know if I can, because this podcast is so weird and gross that
itself.
I think it's going to fly. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. We're big fans. Thank you for doing this, and we can't wait to listen.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Thank you, hon.
Bye.
Bye, Jamila.
Bye.
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 Smart.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.